Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm Libra Online. It is Tom Wilson. Welcome to No More BS with Michael and Don. By the way, Michael will be going to me in a few minutes. I'll be ready. I hope you all had a great Christmas and New Year's. I know I was busy for the whole time. I'm in the process of moving. And if any of you have moved before, you know, it's a long, long process to move.
Hey,
sorry,
I was a little late.
Hey, Michael. Happy New Year to you.
Yeah. Happy New Year to you, my friend. And you just gave me a Happy New Year. You want to spill the beans, or is that too early in the show? We are actually going to be able to do the show right next to each other because we live in the same town.
Yeah, I'm moving to Olympia, Olympia. In about, what is it, about 12? No, 15 days, I think.
Yeah,
15
days, yeah.
No, it is 12 days.
12 days. Sometimes it's not.
It's going really fast. Because I'm in a little bit right now. And it took all hell 5 days to sell. Which went very, very fast. And so we had to find something really quickly after that. And we went all the north and south, and we ended up figuring out it was cheaper in the long run to move down where you live. Oh, we found a house down there.
All I can say is that makes me a very happy camper.
But we still have several steps to go because moving is not easy. But anyway, what have you been up to?
I have been dealing with the snow, which has been interesting because I don't know about you, but I don't have snow tires, so it's been a little challenging. The hardest part of this Christmas is that my grandfather is very, very sick, and he's in a hospital now, and he's going to go to, it looks like a retirement center, like a nursing home kind of a place, once we find a place that's good for him. So, I'm thinking about him a lot. And but he's in his 90s, so he's got a good run. And my grandmother's 95. So,
wow.
My best lesson of Christmas this year is we were separated for Christmas, meaning Emily and me. And yes, so people know, Emily and me are fine, but I wanted to spend time with my grandmother, and so I did, and it was very enjoyable. And then I went to, for Christmas Eve, I was alone for a little bit, and then friends found out that I was alone, and said, that doesn't quite work, and so they came and picked me up from Tacoma, and I was with them, my extended family, as I recall. Yes, you're part of that extended family group, but the Leakeys, which you will definitely meet once you move down here, because it'll be easier to introduce you to all these people. So you'll have more friends than a shake and a stick in about, you know, 5 minutes after you get here. It's okay, Sean, come in, let's go.
I already know quite a few people from the
area. Yeah, that's going to be great, man. I mean, you're like, okay, I have a joke for you, okay, because you know it. Do you already know that you have a person, two people in our house that has wheelchairs? That means that your wheelchair can go in my house anytime you want. And by the end of the summer, we're hoping to put another ramp in the front yard. So right now you got to go through the back, like everybody, like that's the only way to get in. But we're hopefully getting a ramp in the front too. And the other thing I'm going to tell you is that, yeah, it'll be nice. We'll have it in both places, and we're getting a bed for gardening stuff. So I feel like, and your mom's got a green thumb already. Maybe we'll have an advantage. We'll have people to know what they're doing and give us a clue. We've decided that we wanted a garden. So next year we're going to grow a garden.
Yeah, that would be important to help some vegetables.
Yeah, I wanted the vegetables and Emily wanted flowers. Can you tell me where I think of my stomach more than she thinks of beauty.
Well, you can do a little bit of both, maybe.
We're gonna do that. So that's basically keeping that.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever lived anywhere. Because my mom is, I think, more than her family. More, that's all they, and, you know, they all have gotten, because they grew up with my grandma, her habits, her money, gotten to feed the whole family, you know, so, yeah.
That'd be great, and I'm sick of thinking about you moving here. I mean, that was a very surprising Christmas present, even though you didn't think that for that.
It was very surprising.
I hope you're happy that we're going to be somewhat neighbors.
Yeah, I was a little bit closer to you, but I don't think it's too far away. It's probably like an hour on the bus. So,
from here?
Well, I mean,
I'll find your
less than a half hour. I know it's just an hour to get to work.
From my house, it takes 15 minutes to get to work.
Okay, then it might actually be 30 minutes then, maybe.
Yeah, I'm not worried about it. I'm going to be able to see you much more often than I am now. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
I won't drive you nuts, and I won't have you make you have to change the lot or anything like that. But if you want to see me, you can see me anytime you want. You won't have to throw me out or anything.
Well, like that. But my house is doing it. We had about 15 to 16 inches at my house in 2 days. So we would totally snow in the whole week. So,
yeah, I know the feeling. Mom had to come get me from Seattle to get me to Seattle.
Yeah.
My mother-in-law, yeah. So,
well, it'd be nice to live in town because where I live right now, there's snow ground, the main road, but it did not snow for some of the bad people. People cannot get anywhere.
It'll be easier to get to the capital from where you live.
Yeah.
If you have to go to a meeting now, it'll be a breeze.
Yeah, I can deck my music. But I found it all, but all these
calls. And now you have a place where the rally comes and everything else to figure out what you want to do.
Oh, yeah, yeah, they want me to do it for a rally now. January 26th.
Oh, January 26th, okay.
And 1 p.m., the sun is down rally at the Capitol. So if you're interested in that.
You might want to mention that when Dana's on, too.
Yeah.
I think she might eat that up for lunch.
So that would be one of the events. I know Diana and Alex have a lot of other events going on. She handed it all and you're going to be a 15-day something this year. So it's going to go really, really fast.
What is the 26th of January, right?
Yeah,
but that's a, I gotta fill out a remind me after the show to send me a text message and make sure you take a leave day so I can go help you, okay?
Yeah, then I can check me out too. Then
yeah.
Wednesday
the 26th of January. Okay.
Yeah.
So you'll be here before the next... You'll be here by the end of January then.
Well, no, we will be here like... I am moving the week. The week before the rally.
A week before the rally. That's a little nuts.
But I'll
help you with whatever, you know that.
And I have to be a good guy for the day before for my holiday advocacy.
Wow.
It'd be busy, so I don't know. And then I have to find out the transportation in the area. But I am happy.
Yeah, I'll help you figure all that out.
I am very happy because you told me before you have free transportation.
Well, I'm just grateful to have a free friend. You even talked me into buying, I don't know what they call it. I might mess this thing up for it. I was looking, and we were talking about you at dinner tonight. And I said, I got to buy that movie pass thing that you like so we could go together.
Oh, yeah, I'm buying.
So whatever, we got to figure out what theater you like, and then we'll buy one.
Oh, I'm doing Regal.
Regal? Okay. Who's Regal?
The guy live like a mile from it.
We'll get y'all hooked up.
I think it's like a mile. It's only like a mile from my house. Incredible.
No, I'm going to hook you up. That's going to be your present. Welcome back. I mean, I got a couple of things we're going to get you for presents. It's called a homewarming party, but I'm happy that you're coming. Now, ladies and gentlemen, he's not talking because he's laughing at me, and I don't want that because we actually have a camera that we can see each other, so it's easier for me to follow Sean. I'm really excited. My best friend is one of my best friends is moving here, so yeah, there's gonna be a housewarming party, boys. There's gonna be some partying going down in Olympia, Washington that week, or a couple weeks later after you calm down and say, "Oh my God, Michael." But it'll be fun. Hey, maybe you could talk to your sister to come down once in a while too, huh?
Yeah, it's fine. At least the first couple weeks, she will be there. So yeah, then.
You know, the funniest part of Sean is I've never met her, not once.
And then you can meet my other. I don't know, have you met my other sister?
I don't think so. Maybe once, but I don't think so. One time I think we met kids because I was at your house for like 5 seconds or something.
So my other, I have two sisters. My other sister lives not too well. It's sort of a way. It's in the Buick County.
Like I said, I'm not going to drive you nuts, and you can always come over anytime you want. But I'm really happy that you picked Olympia to live. Me and Emily will do the best we can to spoil you just a little bit. It is kind of nice to have a friend that actually is in the neighborhood. My grandfather used to say, you got to keep your nose clean because you know me so well. Okay, go ahead.
Hello,
how are you?
I am well, how are you?
Outstanding. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Fancy meeting you here.
Yeah.
Aren't a couple of nice guys like you doing at a place like this?
Well, they gave us the radio show, and we said, okay, we'd like to have a good guest, and that's you. So, but welcome to the Brain Injury Network, No More BS, and we are so honored to have you tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Sean's never met me before, but I don't think.
We've seen each other around, though.
Yeah, I figured as much. I figured you have met once or twice.
It's better you do on Zoom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We tend to like to raise a ruckus in the same circles. So we cross paths for sure.
Yeah, because you're on the developmental disability council.
I am, yeah. Also, well placed from trying to raise a ruckus, but,
Amen to that.
How long have you been a member?
A little over a year.
Okay.
Yeah, it was strange because I joined during the pandemic. I joined that first November, and we had our first in-person meeting, I think, in July.
Right.
And I went and met with folks, and I was like, everybody's so tall in person. Because I'd just seen these little Zoom boxes, these very small faces. Like, you're all huge. It was funny.
Oh, boy, yeah.
Sean, you should tell her about the 26th or whatever it is.
Yeah, you might know already. Maybe it's nearly golden. We're doing a rally in Olympia on the 26th.
On the 26th.
And it's to close down the remaining residential habilitation and centers.
Okay.
Like UG institutions. So we'll be doing it in the afternoon from 1 to 2:30 right there.
Okay.
And I have built up.
26th of January?
Yeah. If everything goes right, we don't have problems. But so far, they're allowing people to do stuff outside.
Mm-hmm.
So that's nice. They handle a lot of the indoor stuff because it's cold and hanging.
Alright. I'm checking my calendar. What am I doing on the 26th?
It's a Wednesday.
I have class that night, but I'm free during the daytime.
Oh, that was good. I'm sorry, that.
Yeah, I'm going to try. I mean, I got to get permission and all that because I work for the agency that we're trying to close down, which is kind of good. I can tell you the conflict of interest, but yes, I will try to be there, yes.
Okay. I want to clarify something.
You know where my heart is if I'm not.
I want to clarify something. We are not trying to calm down.
No, I understand. Yes. But the institutional, yes. I stand corrected. Even though I'm not standing, yes. what is I did, by the way, read some of your paper, but then it got crazy at work the last hour and a half.
Yeah.
So I apologize, I did not read all of it. But I am curious about a couple of things that I read about it. So, and that is the statistical data of people getting that are unemployed hasn't changed. And this is my data. 25 years when I started,
mm-hmm.
it was still 91% of people. And that's 25 years later.
Yeah.
That are on, if you're on SSI, you stay on SSI.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that a little nuts that we haven't moved the needle one iota?
Well, I think it depends on a couple of different things, I guess. Like, it depends on if you think it's important for people with disabilities to have jobs. If you don't think it's important, then that is completely fine.
Well, I mean, I kind of like don't like being poor. I mean, I like green cash. I mean, I like it a lot. You buy things with it, and you save it, and you buy other things like a house with it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just found that interesting that it hasn't changed very much.
Right. I think that a lot of social policy that's connected to disability has just not changed. So, for example, most of the metrics around accessing SSI or around means testing to get access to Medicaid, those numbers haven't changed since 1964. Like the numbers about only being allowed to earn, I think to get SSI, you can't make more than $735 a month. And if you save more than $2,000, you can lose your benefits. Those numbers are based on 1964 numbers, a 1964 income and standard of living. They have not changed in 57 years?
Why the hell not? Can I be that blunt?
Because some people really just don't care. And also, I think the other thing to consider about thinking about what was happening, what the landscape looked like in 1964, most people, or sorry, a whole lot of disabled folks in 1964 were institutionalized. It was a very small minority who were out of institutions and even able to work at all. And so there, when they designed these systems, they didn't design it thinking that we would have laid the groundwork for the kinds of advocacy and social justice work that disability movement builders, disability justice advocates have done in the intervening decades. They weren't picturing a world where you can be a badass organizational development consultant who comes and does public speaking gigs with me. Like, they were picturing you having a very different kind of trajectory for your life. Mm-hmm. And so to them, at that point in 1964, based on their social conditioning, based on the way that they've always been taught to think about disability, they designed a system that they thought was charitable. They thought it was generous to let you save a whole $2,000 and to let you earn a whole $735 a month. And they haven't changed that framework since then. They haven't evolved with the rest of us, and it's a huge problem.
So how do we do that?
Well, I think we're working. We're trying. My goodness, we're trying. And we do have things like ABLE accounts. That's nice. But it's such a drop in the bucket, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not trying to be, I read it as much as I could read it.
Yeah.
But it's like, it seems that this circle is going to continue to, I guess I read it and I said, this circle will never stop until we have to fix the game, because the way it's played now, you'll always be in poverty. Am I reading that wrong?
No, I don't think you're reading it wrong at all. And I think that one of the ways, because it's a circle, that means there are multiple access points for change. It's not that it has to start in one area and move in a straight line. We can start in a lot of different places. And my argument is, if we can't get the government to kick it in gear and legislate some better systems and supports for us in terms of social policy, a good alternative is to take advantage of the fact that there is a huge labor shortage, that there's this untapped reservoir of talent and brilliance that's underemployed and underutilized. And if we are willing to make some very necessary changes to the way we think about work and to the kind of work culture that we cultivate, we would be able to build workplaces that are more inclusive, more accommodating, and boost the economy by having access to this amazing labor pool that's just not getting to flourish. Yeah. So leave the government out of it. Then we don't need the policy change stuff. Because I don't think people want. I think it's great that we have tools like SSI to offer even a minimal level of support to the people that can benefit from it. And I don't think it's something that people aspire to. I don't think you dream about being on SSI, right? No. I think it's a necessary tool.
Right.
And I think for a lot of folks, there's really no reason why you can't have a wonderful career that is fulfilling, that is interesting, where you are treated with dignity, where you do work that matters to you, and you go home at the end of the day feeling proud of what you've accomplished. The only thing that's getting in the way is bad attitude.
Okay, all I'm going to say is keep going. I mean, I don't want to stop you, because it's like, well, you know, the other thing I was interested about in your paper is that you talked about a little bit, or maybe we talked this week, and maybe I'm messing them up about where we talked about it, is there's nobody with a disability in a leadership role.
Right. A visible disability in a leadership role. Yeah.
Yeah, like, okay, like, let me spill it. Like cerebral palsy or Down syndrome or, even my friends for 50,000 years, but I don't know what your diagnosis was. But it's like, really? Why? I mean, it's like they don't want, and I'm white as toast, as I've said before, but they don't want even a person to say, I have it. Why don't you ask me?
Yeah. Maybe you're referring to some of the data that I cited in the paper came from a think tank called Accenture.
Yeah.
And they did a lot of research about disclosure, about talking about disability in the workplace. And they found that if you look at those C-suite positions, like chief executive officer, chief financial officer, the like la-di-da, cream of the crop folks, over 80% of the folks in the C-suite who have a disability keep it a secret. They don't tell anybody. And there's such a terrible missed opportunity there for the power of representation. It could be so powerful, I think, to be able to see your leader say, I have dyslexia, I have bipolar disorder, I have depression, I have anxiety, I have whatever, go on and on and on, right?
Right.
But I think that they also have been conditioned to feel like they'll be perceived as less valuable, that it's going to be too dangerous for them to share that information. And if they don't feel safe sharing that information, how the heck is anybody below them in the food chain supposed to feel safe sharing that information?
Yeah.
That's worrisome.
Yeah. And Sean, feel free to drop in here anytime you want, but...
No, I was wondering, since you're writing a paper about employment, did you talk any about the form of health care for workers with disabilities? Like in a minute, for the people that don't know, I use the form of health care for workers with disabilities. Like in a minute, and buying Medicaid buy-in program where I pay a monthly premium based on the based on my income level.
Based on your income level.
And so, yeah, I pay that premium every month to have Medicaid services, including critical care services. And I think that program has been beneficial to if people knew about that more, it would be more of a thing in all the SSI aspect. So have you heard of that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a great example of some creative problem solving too, to try to create another access point for people to get Medicaid services while still maintaining some more autonomy than you might have otherwise.
I found that service to be very helpful I have a permanent disability. So That means I have to have food to attend to the business my whole life. So having many things, but having XWG have service that helped me and a lot of other people be able to go to work. And still have services, but not be afraid to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a good idea. The bulk, would, Michael, would it make sense for me to kind of walk through what I covered in the paper?
Yeah. I mean, I tried to do a couple pieces of it. It was like,
it's a lot.
Yeah, it was like, wow. But it was like, also, so go ahead and do that, but I also have a couple more for you, but go ahead, yeah.
Yeah, so this is something that I worked on as part of my studies at Seattle University, working on my master's in public administration. And I'm particularly interested in workplace culture. I'm really interested in what it feels like to be at work and how we can make it feel better and how we can make it feel better for everyone and not just the people who are currently thriving in most workplaces. And when I look at a field like the public sector, when I look at nonprofits, when I look at government, I think that's the place that you should be able to see the model for the rest of the country to follow in terms of how it feels to be at work and the kinds of opportunities that exist for folks in creating workspaces where you thrive because of who you are and because of the unique life experience that you have. And that's part of the value that you bring to the workplace and that's celebrated, rather than being in a space where you either can't get the job or you can only get a job that comes with no power and is kind of entry level, or you get the job, but it's such a hostile workplace and full of so many indignities and microaggressions that you quit because it's awful. And I think a lot of that all speaks to culture. It all speaks to like what, there's an organizational psychologist I really admire named John Amici. He's in England and he talks a lot about how your culture is defined by the worst behavior that you tolerate. That it's not the worst thing that's ever happened to you. It's not the best thing that's ever happened to you. It's not what you do when everybody's watching. It's the stuff that you see and you notice, and maybe you don't really like it, but you don't speak up. And when I think about the experience of marginalized folks, people with disabilities, people of color, people of marginalized genders, immigrants, and on, I think a lot of that experience includes those moments where people say and do things to you that are not okay, and the people in power in your workplace tolerate that behavior. They kind of turn the other cheek, they turn the other direction, and they're like, yeah, we'd rather people didn't say racist stuff to you, but we'll let it slide. It's just a microaggression. And one of the things that I see a lot with employers, especially when I think about disability, is that they say over and over and over again, it's not that we don't want to hire people with disabilities. They just don't apply. They just don't apply for jobs here. Or it's not that we don't want to offer accommodations. It's that people don't ask. If people asked me, I would be happy to give them whatever accommodation they need. But they don't take the time to think about, what does it take for me to disclose to you that I need an accommodation? What have you done to make sure that I'm going to feel safe doing that? What have you done to signal to me that you're going to be the kind of person who will hear me out and say yes to whatever it is that I ask for or try to co-create a solution? Those are culture questions. Like, what are the signals that you're sending in your job description when you're hiring that give people a clue that this is a workplace that's going to be safe and friendly for a wheelchair user, or that this is a workplace that's going to be safe and friendly for a person of color? Like, are you thinking about how you actively make that clear to people? Because I got to say, when I'm looking for a job and I'm reading job descriptions, I'm looking for those clues. I'm looking for those hints that are going to tell me this is a space where I'm going to be able to show up as myself and feel safe and feel comfortable and feel like I can do my job and be celebrated as I'm going to feel a sense of belonging. Or I also look for the clues that maybe this is not going to be the place where I'm going to feel okay doing that.
See, and maybe this is a different question. Is it, you think, because I work in disability, it's harder to me I don't want to say harder, but more difficult for me because I see the changes that we could make, but I'm not in a position to change it. But when I work with you, I'm like, we know we can change it. Like, I'll give you one example. When we worked with the people that were doing the bus, you know, working mm-hmm. with that.
Yeah,
you gave me some courage, basically, because I said to myself, well, the worst that can happen is he says no. And then a colleague found out that I was staying an hour after work because of the way my bus worked to make the bus home. You had a half hour to an hour wait, depending on if you made it on time. And she's like, no, 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 no. You don't have to go freeze your butt off for an hour after you're done to go home to work. You're going to get sick. I mean, you know, I'm not 40. I'm not 20 anymore. I don't do football games in the cold weather. You're talking about how flexible they came about changing the bus route or changing your work schedule.
Yeah.
That was something when we did that, I was thinking about that one. That's not a small thing. That's not, in a lot of people's eyes, that's considered small.
Mm-hmm.
But when you don't get soaking wet and you're not cold and you're not on the bus waiting for a bus for an hour after you get off and you eat at 6 instead of 7, that's a whole different ball of wax.
It is. It really is. And I think that so for me, a lot of it, you've heard me rant about this before. I've got this thing about hospitality and about when you join a workplace, when you join an organization, part of that onboarding process, I think it really matters if people approach it from a sense of hospitality, right? Like, I want to welcome you. I want you to feel comfortable in the space. I want to make sure you have everything that you need. And I understand that comfort is going to look different from person to person, and you're going to need different things to feel comfortable than a different person, and I need to be prepared for that. And I also need to understand that you as a newcomer in this space may not yet feel that it's okay to ask for anything at all,
right?
Don't want to appear to be a burden when you're brand new, or you may not know what the options are about what you could request. And so my job in making you feel comfortable, just as if I were to invite you into my home to come have a dinner party, right? I would ask you if you have any dietary restrictions. I would ask you if you have any allergies. I would ask you, loads of questions so that I could be prepared to give you an experience that is going to feel really good and feel really easy. Like, that's my job as a host. And I think about that from a workplace perspective. My job as an employer not to be to proactively say, it is important to me that you think you have access to everything that you need to thrive here. And these are the things that I'm already thought of and that I can offer. And I imagine there are things that are not on this list that you might need that I haven't thought of yet. And I would love to hear from you about what those are. Wouldn't that feel so much different on your first day of work?
It would make you want to go to work. You know what I mean? Instead of, how do I go, you know, like,
I want to work there. That's where I want to work. Yeah.
Right. Well, like, and I say I want to work for you all the time, right? It's like, we empower each other. It's kind of cool.
I was thinking about, so my kids go to this really amazing private school, and I want every child to get to go to a school like this. It's just dreamy. And their teacher, she didn't have the kids come to school yesterday. She said, you know, first week back after Christmas break, let's make it a short week. We'll do 4 days instead of 5. So first day will be Tuesday, not Monday. And on Tuesday, the focus of the day is going to be just reconnecting with each other after time away. So we're going to have a pajama day. Everybody shows up in their PJs, bring your favorite stuffed animal. We're going to make some pancakes. We're going to play games. It's just going to be about reconnecting as humans. And we'll dive into the actual, like, academic work on Wednesday. And I thought, shouldn't all our workplaces be like that, too?
Amen. Amen.
Wouldn't that be great, like, to really focus on connection and humanity and ease and gentleness and say, like, we know that we have work to do, and we know that we will get to it. And it's just as important that we focus on, like, connecting person to person and really thinking about how it feels to be at work together.
Yeah. No, especially with this pandemic, I think, to be close, I mean, and I don't mean the wrong way, close to somebody besides, I mean, it's totally weird. One of the reasons that I asked him to be Zoom is so that it's easier because everybody's wearing a mask.
Yeah.
Well, the brand, some people are brand new and you don't know what they look like.
Mm-hmm.
We got new people. And I'm like, will you take your mask off for 5 seconds so I know what your face looks like?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of unique. We don't think about that.
Yep. Sean, you look like you were going to say something.
Oh, yeah, I think you know what about when you thought of me around, it would be nice. There's more of a loss coming. Because I thought that I did not have to. I've been ever since I had a smaller non-profit. Mm-hmm. Only, you know, 5, 6, 7 employees. So sometimes you are going to get enough training. And then another person really going, they may give you kind of a really brief outline of what they want you to do. So you feel like you have to create the whole program. So baby, I don't know what they want me to do.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it'd be finding if we create more employers to take their time onboarding new employees, it would help.
Mm-hmm.
And also, get them ready for new experiences. So have you been or had a place where you had a real positive onboarding?
I don't know that I can say that I've had a really positive onboarding experience in a workplace, but I have had one of the things that's been really fascinating being in this master's program at CLU has been navigating my disability on campus and seeing how different professors respond to it. And that did feel a little bit like kind of a miniature version of the onboarding process. So in some cases, I would go to a professor, like the way that they do accommodations at the university is obnoxious. Every quarter, I have to go back to disability services and I have to say, yep, I still have a disability. It's still there. It didn't go away in the last 12 weeks. And then they send letters to my professors for that quarter, and they say, Adana gets access to these free accommodations, and you're not allowed to ask her questions about it, that kind of thing. But I still have to go to the professor myself and negotiate, like, what that accommodation is going to look like. So one of my accommodations, for example, is I have a chronic illness, so sometimes I might need an extension on a deadline if I'm not well and I can't do work. And so I have to go to every single professor and say, I have chronic illness. I might need an extension on a deadline at some point. Can we talk about how much time you'd be willing to give me for a deadline extension and what I have to do to get it and blah, 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 which is a huge burden. It's a lot of work. And in some cases, I get a professor who is not awesome. But most of the time, and I think I'm thinking about two professors in particular, I get responses that are wonderful, that are very warm and very friendly and very human-centered from teachers who say, like, absolutely, I've got your back. Don't worry about the deadline. Take care of yourself and get well, and then we'll figure out the rest of the stuff later. And that feels really positive. I've had one professor in particular, and she does a lot of work on disability justice in the workplace. This is kind of her bailiwick. Her name is Rashmi Jordia. She is a really great example of someone who does a lot of proactive communication to make sure that people know just where her heart lies when it comes to inclusion. So first day of class, she spent the entire class period walking through the syllabus. We've been the whole 2.5 hours, like either just like connecting with each other as people and doing introductions, or that's part of the time. And the rest of the time is going through the syllabus one paragraph at a time and making sure that everybody understands what the expectations are. She sees it as her contract with us about what to expect for the quarter, and she wants to make sure it's really clear. And then when she gets to the section, she has a whole section in the syllabus about accommodation. And really it boils down to her philosophy is she is very committed to offering accommodations to anyone who needs it for any reason. Everything from you need an accommodation based on the fact that you're a parent and you've got kids who might be popping in at any given moment and distracting you, to accommodations based on a disability. And she wants to create a space where you don't have to deal with the burden of going through university systems. If you need something, she's open and would love to talk with you about what solutions you can work on together. And if you get to a point where maybe there's a piece of equipment that you need, she would contact Disability Services for that. But up until that point, she really wants to be able to do it privately, just between the two of you, figure out what's going to make the class as accessible as possible and make sure that you have access to that. So that's my gold standard, is that experience of like, person to person, I want to let you know that I'm very invested in your success. I want to support you in getting access to anything you need to make this work. And that's it. Let's figure it out together. She's awesome.
That's awesome. I mean, I was like, can I meet her? I mean, just
she's so
say,
great. Yeah.
I mean, it's like the other thing I noticed is that you said, talked about this earlier too in the paper, is we've kind of set ourselves up like, if you don't get the accommodation, plus I'll give you an example so people know what I'm talking about. If I didn't have Dragon on my computer, you might as well not hire me, because I don't know how to do it. I mean, I'm not typing, right?
Yeah.
I'm talking into a computer. It seems so expensive, but without it, I'm toast.
Right.
It's like, you know, you don't decide, you know. It's interesting to me. We don't make the investment. Looking at the paper, if you don't make the investment in the short term,
right,
you're going to end up paying for it more in the long term.
Mm-hmm.
Because, okay, let's say, what was the software? This is a ballpark idea. $6,000, $9,000, let's say.
Okay.
$14,000, whatever. But if you break it down, and I did work for them for 25 years, you would say, that was a pretty good investment. Instead of being on public assistance forever, you're now not on that because you made a good investment on software, which wasn't as good as it is now 25 years earlier or later. But it's just to think about the same thing with adjustments about, you know, it's funny to me now you have people wanting to stand up. I find it amusing because I don't stand at all, to say they don't want to sit. It's okay. It's a radio show. They can hear a dog. It's kind of interesting to me how far we've come, because now you have these balls, these big, gigantic balls. I don't know if I'm using the right term, but, like, they're gigantic.
Oh,
and people sit on them. It's like, are you kidding me? I'm sitting in my chair. Okay, I finally, a year and a half ago, asked for a different chair because I got tired of sitting in my wheelchair. And I got it's just interesting how accommodating we are if we think about it for everybody. Because if you make it better for everyone, it'll help everybody with a disability as well. I just would like your thoughts about that. Can I throw you?
Oh, yeah.
All right. I could talk about that for a week. So
I was trying to, I hope that you like that.
Yeah, that's a great question. No, it's one of my favorite questions. So I firmly, firmly, firmly believe in something called the curb cut effect. And the curb cut effect, there's a really great article in the Stanford Social Innovation Review. I can send you a link if you want to share it with folks. the curb cut effect is basically the idea that when you design for the most marginalized person in a community, you make things easier and more accessible for everybody. So when we finally got off our collective rears and we put curb cuts and sidewalks, they didn't just make sidewalks more accessible for folks who use wheelchairs. It made sidewalks more accessible for people who push strollers or people who walk with a cane or delivery drivers who are carrying packages on a dolly. Like, there's a long list of people who are better able to access the built environment because we made this accommodation for wheelchair users. There's another name for it. It's called targeted universalism. And basically, like, you have a targeted universalism. Universalism is a theory that was created by John Powell at UC Berkeley. He runs the Othering and Belonging Institute. I'm a huge John Powell fangirl. He's amazing. So he basically he calls it like equity 2.0, the next version of equity, right? So imagine what you want to do rather than try to take a traditional equity approach. A traditional equity approach would tell you, you've got this group over here that's doing really well. Let's say it's non-disabled people. And then you've got this group over here who, relative to non-disabled people, is not doing so hot. And you want to just try to close the gap between the two. There's an assumption you're making there. You're assuming that the non-disabled people are fine and they have all of their needs met and their lives can't be better. Like, that's the gold standard. And you want to try to get to that standard. We do the same thing with race. We try to close the gap between Black people and white people, assuming that all white people are fine. All white people are not fine. They're not. There are a lot of white folks who are hurting. There are a lot of people living in poverty. There are a lot of people dealing with addiction. There are a lot of people in unhappy jobs or unhappy relationships. There are a lot of ways in which a person's life cannot be amazing. And so with targeted universalism, what you do is you set a universal goal. So maybe we have a universal goal of home ownership. We want to get to an 80% home ownership rate across the board. That's going to be our goal. And then we look at each of these groups, okay, and we measure their distance from the goal. So for people with disabilities, they might be further away from that goal of 80% than people without disabilities. For people of color, they may be further away from that goal of 80% than white people are. White people are still not at that 80%, though. They still need support to get there. And so the targeted part is, you set your universal goal, and then you need targeted strategies for each group to get them to the goal. And there's probably going to be some magic when you look at the strategies that you develop for the group that's furthest away from the goal. There's going to be some magic there, because you're going to be the most creative, the most audacious, the most innovative in developing those strategies. You're going to come up with some solutions there that you can use across the board to support everybody, kind of like a curb cut. So when you start thinking about centering the folks who are furthest from justice, centering the folks who are furthest away from equity, and doing your most creative problem solving for them, you will probably find solutions that make things better for everybody else.
So Dana, what about when you go back to you talked about this with me a couple weeks ago, how do we end up having some sort of, taking you and me out of the equation because we're doing it, okay? That's why I take you and me out. But how do we get where people with disabilities actually own businesses? Because if you do that, you end up, if you own the business, you probably would make a business that you're not in poverty forever. I mean, because look at what you taught me, the name of the darn place. They made up, I always forget the name of the city, Utah, was it the Black Wall Street?
Oh, Tulsa, Oklahoma.
It's like, I want to do that for Disability Wall Street. Like, everything's accessible. If you want to live there, it's great.
Yeah.
Because it's like, damn it, it's okay to have one. It's okay to have a disability. It's okay.
Nobody's it's really ever... normal. It's so common, right? Like, it's...
In some ways, it's kind of cool. I get a parking sticker and I don't have to lie about it. And the thing is, like, how do we change? I guess, Sean, the other thing is, like, you have technology skills, right?
Yeah.
And you have science and you have a degree. But it's like, You had to fight so damn hard to find a damn job. That doesn't make any damn sense. I mean, you got a degree, you got the technology, and you got the brain. It's like, what? Like here's one thought that I've had like for the last couple of weeks. If you want to be a janitor, great, but you should be the one running it, not the one that's doing it. Data, am I nuts? Like, somebody should actually be in charge with who has a disability, with a disability. I mean, I'm sorry, but I really believe that. And I love your thoughts if I've lost my marbles, because it doesn't seem to matter. It seems like we have a bunch of able-bodied people walking around that doesn't know disability from a hole in the wall telling me about disability.
Yeah. I don't think you're nuts at all. I'm sorry. I have a really loud and annoying dog who will not stop whining at me. Stop it.
What? I mean, well, give him some love or something.
You're fine. You're fine. He's like, I need snuggle. All right. So I think a lot of it. Yeah, I think to me, Michael, because so you know, like culture work is my thing, right? That's the thing that I keep coming back to. I think social policy is important, and I also think that shifts in culture can drive policy and vice versa. And when I think about how we got to where we are, where the expectations for people with disabilities are so low, that's a culture question, right?
Right.
And we perpetuate that starting at a really young age. I think about how, like, when my kids were really young, when my son was 3, the Seattle Public Schools wanted to send him to developmental preschool, you know, special segregated preschool for the little autistic kid, as opposed to putting him in a general education setting with the kids that he would see at the grocery store or the kids he would see at the park or the kids that would, like, just the kids in our neighborhood, right?
Right.
So from the age of 3, we start conditioning our kids to think it is normal to be segregated. It is normal to be in settings where you don't see people who have visible disabilities. Those kids are over there. And then those kids grow up. They go through all their schooling. They get to the age of 18. They go on to college. They go on to the workplace. And they've been conditioned to think that it is normal to only be in a room with other non-disabled people. And so then when we have these conversations about like diversity and inclusion, and I say, what about disability? They look at me like I have 2 heads or something, because it just didn't occur to them that disability is part of diversity. Like the conditioning is so powerful.
Right.
Because it's been going on for so long. And I think that we have such an incredible opportunity to really change the narrative if we were able to restructure the way that we approach schooling at a really young age and think about the story that we're telling kids from such a young age about who belongs where.
You have young kids in school. I mean, the audience doesn't know that, but
yeah.
So you have young kids, but I was wondering about the kiddos too, because they would say, why isn't Johnny in school with me? If you see him down the hall, if you see him outside, when you play with them, why wasn't he in class, right?
Yes.
Because I remember back in the day, when in 1986, I went for the high school swim team. And everybody and their mother, including my mother, tried to talk to me to go to the Special Olympics. And I went, look, it's not the Special Olympics. I'm not interested in the Special Olympics. I have nothing against the Special Olympics. I want to swim for my swim team. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yeah.
Holy cow, I was like doing something crazy. I wanted a letter from my school. Like, I wanted to put it on my jacket.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, like, to me, that also gets back to, again, like, this culture thing. I think a lot about the language that we use and the ways that we try to make something like segregation, which is so awful, sound like it's a good thing, because we call it special.
We make it sound sexy.
We call it special. It's special. It's special education. Like, it is not, it is neither special nor education, actually.
Amen.
It's terrible.
I mean, you know, you go only high school diploma that you can't even, yes, I have dyslexia, but like, you can't even read what the hell it says. I mean, come on now. Come on. Really?
Yeah.
And I went to special ed. I know everything about it.
I know, they call it, we soften it, and we use all these euphemisms, and I explain to people all the time, like, that they, like, when people don't want to use the word disability, like, it's a bad word. It's not a bad word. There's nothing wrong with it. I have absolutely no problem being a disabled person. I love my disabled community. That's fine. That's completely fine. That's great. I do have a problem with people wanting to soft pedal it and call it differently abled, or, like, all of these, like, sunshiny, wrap it in bubble wrap and make it softer and gentler and less uncomfortable. That discomfort isn't about me. That's not about how I feel. And it's probably not about you, right? It's about them. Yeah. It's about them wanting to feel better. That's the reason we use euphemisms, is to try to make a bad thing sound less bad. And that tells me that they think disability is a bad thing. And that's a problem.
So how do we, I guess my other question, even though in some ways I have the answer, okay? I haven't thought about it. But you're the guest tonight.
Okay.
What is the answer to change the perception of a disability as a positive instead of a negative?
Yeah.
Because when you go in a medical arena, they still look at it as, we're going to try to fix you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that a lot of us are already doing it, right? Like, I look at those absolutely astonishing, like, trailblazers of disability justice, like Judy Heumann and Mia Mingus and, oh my gosh, Lydia X. Z. Brown and, like, all these other badasses, right, who are, like, out and proud about their disabilities and who talk about it with such nuance and such joy and such just utter brilliance. I think that is incredibly powerful. I think representation is incredibly powerful. I think that those are those kinds of, like, cultural shifts that we start to see where people are, even those, like there was that really cool campaign a couple years back from folks with Down syndrome about, like, stopping the phrase special needs and not using it anymore. They're like some of the commercials were things like special needs. Like, a special need would be something like, I need to be massaged by a cat, or I have to wear a suit of armor to go grocery shopping. Although, I mean, in the pandemic, maybe you do need armor for grocery shopping. But in general, like, if they're not, they're access needs. And literally everyone has access needs. We all do. They look different from person to person, but they are all access needs. The problem is that we've just decided to center the access needs of a small group of people and tell everybody else that they're being a pain in the ass. And that's just ableism.
I love our guests, don't you, Chuck? I mean, I'm gonna be straight up with my guest. I work with this woman, and that you know, why.
I was thinking about, like, that idea about accommodations, right? I remember when my son started occupational therapy. He's autistic, and he also has sensory processing disorder and a couple other things. And his therapist was explaining to us that, like, we all have sensory needs, and we all make adjustments based on our sensory needs.
Right.
And for a kid like Langston, it's just that the adjustments are bigger. They're just more intense. That's all. That's the only thing that's different. Like, we all have those things around, like, we like the room to be warm, or we like the room to be cold, or we like to have noise in the background, or we can't work with noise in the background, or we need the chair to be soft, or we need the chair to be hard. Like, everybody's got that stuff, and they need to make those adjustments to make their environment comfortable for them. That is a very normal thing. It's a universal thing. But somehow when you put a diagnosis on it, like, people freak out. Like, you're asking for like gold-plated toilets like Trump needed. Like, it's silly. Yeah. It's just silly. It doesn't make sense.
Oh, you know what? That's hilarious. Okay. Oh, that's really fun. That's funny. So I am curious about, in your paper, you had a lot of, some graphs about the disparity between people with disabilities, even worse than if I read it right, people who are black. Did I read that correctly?
Which disparity are you talking about?
Between them working or not working, or being in, or being in less being more environmental safe, like we talked about the other day.
Because
of this COVID situation. Tell me if I read it right.
Yeah.
You're more likely to get nursing homes, prisons, and RHCs, and get COVID.
Right.
Because you're in a environment that
Yeah, they call them congregant settings. So like yeah, spaces where you're crowded, right? So
yeah.
Prisons, nursing homes, RHCs, assisted living facilities, places like that where people are in really small, like tight quarters. If a virus comes through there, it's going to spread really quickly. And when you think about prisons, the vast majority of people in prison are black and brown. And we've got a lot of, so I think that's why you see like the, some of the high rates of COVID fatalities have been by because of things like COVID running through prisons, COVID running through nursing homes, and COVID running through institutions.
So if we help figure out how to limit the conviction rate, just go with me for a minute. If you go limit the eviction rate or help them change different sentence rates, meaning change the way they do the sentence, that maybe their rate would be less.
So now we're getting to one of my other favorite topics, Michael, which is the intersection of racism and ableism in the criminal legal system. So how about this little, this lovely little stat? Let's think about the school to prison pipeline. Most of the time when we hear people talk about the school to prison pipeline, it's talked about in terms of race. And that makes a lot of sense because black youth are about 14% of the youth in this country. They're 44% of the kids in juvenile detention.
Wow.
So huge disparity there, right? Indigenous youth are like 6 times more likely than white youth to be arrested and sentenced to time in juvie. Similar numbers for kids who are Latinx. Here's the kicker though. If you look at kids who are currently in the juvenile detention system, we know they've got some huge racial disparities. It's mostly black and brown kids. You know what the common factor is? About 75% of the kids in juvenile detention have a disability.
And I would bet it's dyslexia.
It's not the school to prison pipeline. It's the special education to prison pipeline. That's the problem. And it's not all special education students, right? It's the black and brown special education students. So when we talk about people with disabilities and access to employment, access to business ownership, entrepreneurship, right? Access to home ownership. The question I'm always asking is which disabled people? Are we creating those opportunities for all disabled people or just for some of them? And most of the time it's just for some of them.
Wow.
So wow. I think like if we look at our prison system, it's not just that we criminalize blackness, we also criminalize disability. So if you are black and disabled, that's double jeopardy.
Okay. Wow. I'm blown away.
Pretty bad out there.
Sean, you got anything? Or do we have a caller? I should ask it that way. I haven't asked all night, which is crazy. And ladies and gentlemen, we are live at 8:08. Please feel free to call in. And Sean has it, I think, on his computer. I don't have it memorized of what the number is to call in. Our guest will be here for a few more minutes. Hopefully, she'll stick around for a second or two.
I believe the call-in number is 424-243-9540.
You are correct. And so...
I believe... Well, the other caller, but I believe... That might be Craig.
Okay, go ahead. Go...
Yeah, you know, this is Craig. Other cousin. Okay. Hey.
Hello.
The other cousin. But I guess.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
Hi, John. Hi, Michael.
Yeah, that has been enjoyed. I have.
I didn't quite get that.
Do you have any questions for us or for our guests?
I just caught some of what you were saying, and the system sucks. The system, you know, if we would end the segregation everywhere, it would solve it within a generation.
Yeah, that's one thing I was wondering. Do you think I'm losing maybe and $1,000 for not how the tobacco ending has been different. Overall, with the help, what do you think we need to modify it?
Boy, my ears just aren't hearing. But I just got back from a long trip, so my was a little clogged, so it's probably me.
Dana, what do you think? Did you understand his question?
Can you repeat the question for me?
He said, do you think we should, and tell me if I'm reading you wrong, Sean, modify special ed, get rid of it, or scratch it and start all over again?
I'm paraphrasing.
Maybe you can ask Sean if I got it.
Yeah. In general, I am not an incrementalist. I'm very much into the Angela Davis school of things, which is to be searching for radical solutions. And she also said that radical simply means grasping something by the root, right? So thinking about what's at the root of the problem in special education. The root of the problem is the idea that kids with disabilities cannot be educated in a general education environment. Like, that's the operating assumption. The whole system is built around that assumption, and that assumption is wrong.
Yeah.
It's just wrong. Outcomes are better for general education students as well as special education students when they're educated in an inclusive setting. Everyone does better. So I say burn it down and start over. But I'm an Aries. I like to set fire all kinds of, like, just, yeah. I set things on fire. My job.
Yeah, the more I think about it, the more kind of because I'm going out, due to the water. To permit the tobacco on the my parents were not allowed that. So I was just told the whole time being able to educate them. And those the teachers and the students to see me as one of their peers. And even though I did struggle at times, I think it was worth it for me and for my peers to be an example and to hear the help with it. And it also encouraged me to go on the Central Washington University has I think when people are turning to separating, it's almost limiting the potential of the person.
You know, Sean, she knows this already, but I thought about going, and I after this question once, but I don't think she'd mind me sharing. Am I smart enough to go? I asked her once.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm sharing too much, you got to tell me, nod your head and I'll say no, because I can't see a camera.
Okay.
But it's just like, no, you are smart enough. You know, first of all, one of the things I've learned in the last few months being around is that you have to have people who believe that you can do things. Or so you can believe that you can do things. It doesn't just happen in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go to school because I want to learn. I want to go to Evergreen because for two reasons. One is Evergreen's right down the street from my house. That makes mathematical, logical sense. And I don't have to pay for a dorm. I live here. And two is it's a decent education, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you look at quality of education. And another thing about your draft that was interesting, at least one of them, and I don't know if I get them all messed up, is you get an education, you get a better education, you get more money.
Oh.
And it's interesting to me to see the correlation between an education that you get and the money you get more of.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have set a permanent underclass of people with disabilities staying poor.
Yeah.
And why? Because the education sucks.
That's why I agree with our caller that segregation needs to end, but I disagree with the idea that we could correct these inequities in one generation. Ending segregation is not going to do it. It would take a massive transfer of wealth because we've got how many centuries invested in this underclass, right? How many centuries of generational wealth have people been able to accumulate from positions of privilege? And the reason that wealth is so accessible is because it's being denied to other groups of people. So
right.
I think about something like enslavement, right? We had slavery in this country for 246 years. And then after that, after 12 generations, 246 years, then we had Jim Crow for another century.
Yeah.
So is it any wonder that the rate of wealth in the Black community is one-tenth of what it is in the white community? That's not a surprise to me. When I think about something like, so my mom was born in 1944 in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. She didn't get to vote for the first time until she was 21 because she needed the Voting Rights Act of 1965 to get passed first because she was a Black woman. So first of all, like that's a hint to any, like if you've never needed landmark civil rights legislation like the ADA or the Voting Rights Act, then you might be a person with privilege. I'm just saying, like if you've never needed access to those things, you're probably all right. At least from a social policy perspective. My mom's mom was born on a plantation in Louisiana in 1913. Her mom was born enslaved. So like it's very recent. It's very, very recent history. I think about like my grandmother and my grandfather worked their entire lives, worked multiple jobs. They never owned a home. They never owned property. They weren't allowed to. That wasn't accessible to them. So, of course, they couldn't take out a loan and help my mom go to college. There was no money for that.
Right.
My parents didn't buy their first house until they were in their late 40s, almost 50. There was no money to help me go to school. I had to take out loans. So I'm carrying a whole lot of debt. And I think about that, the way that generational wealth works, I think about that for disabled folks, too, and for our elders in our community about not having access to wealth and then not having anything to hand off to your children to help them be in a better, more secure position as they're growing up and raising their own families. And so if we really want to get to a place where we can kind of level the playing field and really address some of these inequities when it comes to poverty, we need a substantial transfer of wealth to happen in the U.S. It's not going to be enough just to do better from today forward. Like we have to correct some of the things that we've done over the course of the last 250 plus years.
Mm. So it'll be long before I'm dead.
Unless Jeff Bezos decides to stop being so greedy.
Huh?
But unless Jeff Bezos decides to stop being so greedy and we can have some reparations in this country, sure.
Gotcha. It's interesting too, when you're talking about, as simple as medicine, right? I mean, I know that sounds a little bit off topic, but give me a half a second and I think you'll go with me. You get better care if you are white and not in a wheelchair.
And not poor,
and
yeah.
It seems like it's interesting to me how I guess I read your paper and said disability and a lot of things have a lot in common,
mm-hmm.
that are the same for a lot of culturally stuff.
Yeah.
And I love your thoughts about, yes, I think I read that right.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, I read it as fast as I could read. And it's an hour and a half on a listening machine going, okay, speed up, I'm fast.
That's a lot.
But it's like, if we don't change what we think we can do, as a culture, we're never going to change anything.
Yeah, I think what you're referring to is the section where I talk a bit about environmental racism and the relationship between like racism and poverty and disability and how they're all kind of tied up together.
Yeah.
So a really great example of that is Flint, Michigan, right? You've got
the water.
You've got a Black community living in poverty. Where they're not getting access to clean water. They haven't had access to clean water in how many years now? It's been an astonishingly long time. And the effect of having all that lead in the water has been to have a whole generation of kids who have cognitive impairments caused by lead poisoning. So now they've got all these kids that are going into the special education field, all getting special education services in their public schools, which are not prepared for that influx of students at all. They're not prepared to provide services at that level, to suddenly have this massive influx of kids who need this level of support. And I also think it's very reasonable to draw the conclusion that had that been an affluent white community, the problem would have been solved much more quickly.
Yeah,
like the problem of them having access to clean water, right? It was the fact that they're poor and the fact that they're black meant that people didn't care enough to make it a priority and try to fix it. Another example is a place in Louisiana, they call it Cancer Alley. It's about an 800-mile stretch of the Gulf, where there are a lot of petrochemical plants that dump toxic waste there, and the cancer rate is 700 times higher than the national average.
Oh, my
Lord. 700.
Oh, my God.
Yes, and it's a predominantly black community. The Sierra Club wrote a piece about this a couple years ago about how we can't end climate change, we can't address global warming if we're not willing to address racism. Because what happens is that we have these big companies, like these big chemical companies, right? And they need somewhere to dump their toxic waste. And where do they dump it? They dump it in the communities that we don't care about. That's where they dump it. And in this country, that's black and brown communities. They dump it near indigenous folks. They dump it near black folks. They dump it near Latinx folks. And then those people are exposed to toxins that can cause all kinds of health conditions and disabilities. And this cycle goes on and on and on and on and on. They're all tied up together very tightly. There are also some disabilities that can be caused by lack of access to good nutrition, which can come from poverty, right?
Mm.
Or that can be caused by lack of access to good health care, which can come from poverty. So we take people with disabilities, we force them into poverty with our terrible social policy, and then that poverty makes it more likely that they will become more disabled or that their children will be disabled. But we're still not investing in services and supports and the things that we know that we need to do to create a space where everybody is thriving.
And Dana, what you tell me, and I didn't read this in your report, is that gives me the scenario that most of the time that they die at an earlier age than mm-hmm. they could have because their health care is not as good.
Yeah.
Is that too far of a reach?
No, I don't think so. And one of the critiques that I heard pretty early on in the pandemic, I guess just when the vaccine rollout was starting to happen, one of the ways that when the vaccine was scarce and we didn't have very much of it, one of the ways that some of our folks in government decided to do the rollout would be to prioritize elders, prioritize people over the age of 65. In some communities, we don't have people over the age of 65. There are whole counties in America where there are no black people over the age of 65. We don't live that long. In places like Cancer Alley, for sure.
Holy crap.
So then you can't get access to the vaccine, which you need, and you're more likely to get COVID. It's a hot mess.
You have so much knowledge in your brain.
Well, and I think also about like folks in our disabled community as well, right? Like our elders are not the same kind of elder.
Right.
Like how many of us live to 99? How many of us live to be 100 years old? How many of us even live to be 80 years old? And so to be able to not be able to get access to a life-saving treatment like a COVID vaccine because you don't have the benefits of age, when the fact that you don't get to be that old is created by decades and centuries of discrimination and social policy that puts you in this position that your life is going to be shorter, like that's just pouring salt on the wound.
Wow. I have two questions for you, and I don't know what the time frame is, but would you ever consider coming back?
Oh, of course.
Please. And we could also, John's the computer wins, but we could tape it too, Sam, if you want. But it's fascinating to me. What, besides on your paper, what, if you had to do it, now I'm not saying do it over again, but if you had to think about doing your paper again,
mm-hmm.
what shocked you the most, I guess, in your paper?
I don't know that I would call it shocking, but the thing that I'm utterly perplexed by is how to bridge this gap that seems to exist between very well-meaning employers with good intentions who say, of course I would give accommodations to anyone who asks. And like, what is it going to take to help them see that it's not enough to be willing to do it if someone asks you? You have to proactively signal that it's safe to ask you. You have to proactively offer. And I'm really curious about why is it so hard for people to understand that disability is part of diversity? Why is it so hard for them to understand that inclusion can't be an afterthought? Why is it so hard to get people to understand that inclusion has to be something you do on purpose?
Right.
I think about my business partner, Jessica. This is a silly story, but I think it illustrates the point. She has really long hair, and her husband's a lot taller than her, Patrick. And sometimes when he gives her a hug, he like accidentally catches her hair in the hug, and it pulls her hair, and it hurts. It doesn't feel good.
Right.
And she gets upset about it because, ow, you're pulling my hair. And he always says, I didn't mean to. And she says, well, I need you to mean not to. Mean not to. I want you to try not to. Like, that's it. And that's what happens, I think, with disability inclusion in the workplace is people saying, well, I didn't mean to exclude. Right,
yeah.
Right, but you didn't mean to include either.
Right.
You didn't do that.
And sometimes I wonder, even with organizations, and I'm going to name one,
yeah.
And I was on it, like, get in trouble. The ARC, right?
Sure.
The state ARC, to be exact. When they say you're on a board, but they want you to stay behind and eat lunch or eat somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Next kid told me a red sign, like, no, this isn't for me.
That's not inclusion on purpose, right? Like
that's tokenism.
Yeah.
They want you when it's convenient.
Mm-hmm.
So it was an interesting way of thinking about it.
Yeah.
Because it's really that simple.
And
until we figured out, okay, then you call one person, which happened to be the director, told her what happened, and she bought a wheelchair, and then I was able to go to dinner. It was like, that wasn't hard.
It takes thought. It takes care. And I think that there's something about the way that we've been socialized to not see disability. We've been socialized to keep folks with visible disabilities out of sight and out of the way. And so when people are thinking about workplace culture and thinking about like things that people might need in the workplace, disability doesn't come to mind for them. And they need to work a lot harder to actively think about, there's 61 million of us in the United States. There's a lot of people. Like, it's one in three households. So if it's not somebody in your house, then it's one of your two neighbors.
Wow.
So, like, really, that's a lot of folks, and somehow it's still an afterthought most of the time. And I think that that's just, I don't have words for it that don't include profanity, but it's upsetting.
Well, that's why we have to call the show No BS sometimes.
Yeah, right? But I also think, like, I talked earlier about hospitality, right?
Right.
My husband's in the other room, but he's heard me tell the story about my mother-in-law in the past, so I don't think he'll be upset. My people are Southern. My mama is from Hattiesburg, Mississippi. We do hospitality in a really big, over-the-top, in-your-face kind of way. If you come to my house, and by the time you leave, you can still button your pants, I didn't do it right. Right? That's just how we are. It's going to be iced tea and cake and all the food you could possibly eat and a to-go plate. And like, that's just how we do hospitality, right? It's a really, we have a very big way of performing it. And it's a lot of, I think, active, outgoing, kind of extroverted, like in your face hospitality, right? Which is how I was telling you about like things like when I invite you over for dinner, I will have questions about like, what kinds of things do you like to eat? What kinds of games do you like to play? What kinds of things do you like to drink? Are there things that you're allergic to? Like, I want to be prepared to create a space that's going to feel really hospitable for you.
Okay.
Right? And I think that's what our workplace should be like. And it's all, I think a lot of it is maybe we just need more Southern hospitality in all our workplaces. Because in the other approach to hospitality, like the extreme opposite that I've seen,
yeah.
I experienced with my mother-in-law, who is a wonderful and lovely person. She lives in Portland, and her way of doing hospitality is to say, make yourself at home. So when you go to her house, she is not going to lavish you with food and drinks and fawn all over you. She's going to say, my home is your home. Make yourself comfortable. Do whatever you want. Like, you want a sandwich? Go make one. You need something to drink? Go get it. Like, you're just supposed to go forage for food in the pantry, I guess. But
right.
I had a really hard time with that because I was raised by a Southerner. I kept thinking, like, that feels rude to me. Like, I don't know if it's okay for me to, like, be rummaging through your refrigerator. I don't know if it's, like, I don't know what kind of snacks it's okay to look for. And I think about that as a new employee. Like, is it okay for me to ask for a different chair? Is that all right? I don't know if that's all right. Is it okay for me to ask for a different temperature in my office? Like, there's all these, like, questions you might have. And I think that, like, Southern hospitality style of let me ask you what you need to feel comfortable and let me just start offering stuff and see what fits. That to me, and I know I'm biased, but that to me feels like a step in the right direction when it comes to thinking about inclusion, because it's on purpose. It's not, I'm going to sit back and wait for you to ask me for something and have the burden be on you. You're the guest. There are no burdens for you. You're the new person.
The other thing I wanted to tell with Sean is, she's got this idea and I love it. It's on a different subject, but to make a cookbook that you could use by just using the recipe, but by pictures. Because I can't cook with a squat, but I want to change that so much. And yes, I want to cook like a Southern boy, okay? Like, I want to know how to make the chicken taste good, not just chicken.
I did my Southern New Year's, our New Year's tradition for good luck is black eyed peas and collard greens and cornbread, so.
Nice.
And some PC. Did I yesterday?
I know. See, even I'm a diabetic, but I'd be okay with that.
A little bit. Well, you'll just get the sweet tea. That's fine.
But I don't want to lose any points. I'm like, cold.
You won't lose any points. That's okay. But we call it having, and we don't call it diabetes and stuff. We call it the sugar. You got the sugar.
I tell Emily I want some sugar all the time. You got diabetes. It's not the right kind of sugar, honey. So we just have a few, we have about 30, but we told you it'd be done soon. So
yeah.
We respect your time and wanted to know you have little ones to take to bed or whatever.
Mm-hmm. They have school tomorrow.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. So if folks want to get in touch, my name is Adana Persinentis. I am an equity consultant. I'm the co-owner of Kindred Leaders. It's kindredleaders.com, KindredLeaders.com, which is something I co-own with my dear friend and business partner, Jessica Lawmaster. And we work really hard to make work feel a lot better. We support leaders of organizations of all shapes and sizes in building workplace cultures where people are really treated like humans and thrive in a place that's all about connection and belonging and relationships. And we want work to love you back.
Amen.
Yeah.
And I should ask John if he's got one more for you before you split.
Yeah.
So my co-host doesn't shoot me. I didn't catch you say that again, Sean.
I'm wondering if the article you've been representing public or private.
Oh, the article that you referenced, is it public or private?
It's something that I wrote for a class, but we could make it public easily enough. I'm probably going to keep working on it and get it ready for publication in the next couple of months.
Yeah, that would be interesting to read. I'm back here for coming and talking to us today.
Thanks for having me.
Dana, how do they find you? I mean, I know how, but how does our callers find you?
Yeah. So my website is www.kindredleaders.com, KINDREDLEADERS.com. And my email address is adana@kindredleaders.com. So you can find me there.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
And yes, I definitely would love to come over here and take your hospitality to another level. And I wouldn't even bring snap pants, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, you gotta wear yoga pants or sweatpants or something. Cause
that'll work.
Because we like
that'll
to
work.
Eat.
That'll work.
Oh, boy.
Langston would probably want you to have my famous mac and cheese. So
bring it on and bring me a big fork.
Right?
Oh, boy.
You kids right. Have a good night.
You too. Take care. Yeah.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye. So there you go, folks. And I hope you enjoyed that.
I found the web buzz.
You found it?
Yeah.
All right. So we'll put that on the, I mean, if you could actually, that's dandy. Full disclosure, people, I should tell you that I work with her. She's great. You see for yourself why I think she's great, but it's been fun working with her. I will say that. And that's not solicited. She's great, I think. So we have about, 30 minutes to go or a little less than that. We're done at 9, but if you want to, what else would you like to talk about this evening, sir?
What else in there? I don't know. I think I'm going to die from what a year old for the next year. It is a brand new year.
Yeah. I would have gotten very, I should have done this with her or there. I have actually said it to her. I'm working on being a businessman and being successful in that and helping her be more successful than she already is. And that means a lot to me. I am planning to work for the Mariners this year. I want to make as much money as I can make this year, so next year's a little bit easier. I want to work on paying off some credit card debt, and I want to get a water heater, as sexy as that might not sound. And just make it easier for, and then work a, you know, and then look at long term, what do I want to do, if I want to stay with the state or not. Right now I have 25 years in, so we'll see what happens. But I don't know what my long-term plans are. I do know I'm going to do some more speaking with Dana and hopefully other people. I would like to be a subcontractor and do more of that. And now that you're coming to town, see you more often. I mean, really, we don't see each other except for on the TV, once a month on the screen. And we talk to each other quite a bit, thank God. But, you know, hang out with you some, if you want, that is. I don't want to drive you nuts, but I'm always available. And hang out with family if I get it, you know. I have extended family that I really love. And, that's about it for me. And I'm also going to look at trying to go to Evergreen sometime next year if I can get it done.
Yeah, Evergreen, that would be cool.
What about you?
I know for me, I'm working on hours to get more hours more visible this year. I'll be able to start the next couple of weeks working on the rally as I said earlier, and also on the
Hold on, Sean. I'll be right. Hold on, Sean. I can hear you, but I won't be where you can see me for a few minutes.
Okay, yeah, but I'm running on the newsletter, but I thought it's now newsletter. They're talking about different ways whole reason why we need to calm down and end up doing things. And then the long haul, I want to be able to hang out and about more. So having good friends, but there's a going to movies every week. And maybe even getting myself into wrestling.
Just doing it with you would be fun.
As most people know, one of the things pay-per-views for WWE is coming out.
I'll tell you what. If you can figure a way to get us there, because I don't think my sweet tea would go, so maybe we could get two wheelchairs in one van. If they ever come to Tacoma, I'll go to a wrestling match with you if you find somebody to drive. Because even though we get two wheelchairs, we got to find somebody who could drive us down there, because I don't have a clue. But they might do it in Tacoma Dome or something, and that's pretty close. It's like 30 minutes away from here.
That'd be cool. I'm gonna judge the hand. The Royal Rumble. The Royal Rumble is coming up. So, and of course, I am going to making my new house at Dr. Ball.
So we'll help with that, but I have a contractor, so you won't even have to guess about how to figure out a contractor because I already have one for you. And of course, it's your choice, but you know, I'm going to at least recommend the one that I know that knows what he's doing.
That's kind of my goal this year. Maybe try to read more. I say that every year.
Why don't we make a goal? How about this? How about we read a book together from Amazon and pick it? You could help. You pick 1 month, I pick 1 month.
That'd be cool.
And be in a book club.
That'd be cool.
All right. And then maybe even if we like the book so much, we can call the author and ask him if he wants to be on the show.
I found this new service too. It's a book service. The audio and text version of work from the five main publishing companies. So that I'm looking into that. And the only other thing is, as you know, you mentioned it today, I'm being into technology, so of course, I will always be trying to find new technology that people can use. It's one of my favorite things to do, is work on new technology.
Janet's husband's into that too, and she's going to help me put some stuff in. And I'm working on buying some new software, which we can talk about that sometime. Technology gets better, so will I, and then hopefully it'll help me make things easier. I first of all wanted you to know that I haven't really been talking to you a lot because of what's up with the holidays and everything, but how much I appreciate you. But I wanted you to know, with my grandfather being sick or whatnot, if around all of a sudden that's what's going on with that. But there's not much I can do. It's just a waiting game. But I wanted you to know. I'll try to be available when I'm supposed to be. If there's a show that I'm going to miss because of it, I'll let you know. I think he'll be okay in the long run. He's going home. So that'll be good.
Yeah, it was bad. I lost 3 hours. Well, all of my granddaughters have passed away.
Yeah.
In particular, I lost 3 of them But then I've literally been with this for years. Well, I know I'm definitely.
And so one quick question for you. Did you record tonight? Is this recorded?
This one's been being recorded on Blog Talk Radio. So maybe
is there a way you could figure a way to send that to me or tell me how to get it?
Yeah, I will do that. And I will maybe make a Facebook page so no one will be out of it. Maybe we want to create a Facebook page so we can put it on Facebook.
Okay, and I got one other quick question, even though we're on the live air. What do you think of the show, generally speaking?
I think it's good. And really, I think having one of you guys grab it all is very nice. And I think we might have some more in the future.
Right.
I know I have a few self-advocates who want to come on too, so that would be cool. And maybe we can get Diana Dannon from the off. Wow, a lot of the other people.
Is Diana out of the hospital yet?
Yeah.
Oh, she is? I didn't know that. I thought she was still in there. That's good. I mean, I didn't know. I'm not saying she is, but I thought she was at one time.
Maybe having somebody else talking about the build. Maybe you can tell me about it. But we have some possible
guests. Good deal. I wanted to thank the Brain Injury Network for having us on. Join us next month on the first Tuesday. I did not commit it to sin. I do not know the first Tuesday of next month. The other organization that I invited for a short presentation is called Best Buddies. But I've not invited them before, but then all of a sudden something's happened. But to tell them about getting people hooked up to Best Buddies if they want to be. That's the only thing I have scheduled as of now. Me and you will talk more about how we want to shape the show later on for next month. And remember, next month is a short month, so it'll be seem rather fast because February's got 28 days in it, and then we'll be into March already. So
well,
it'll be like, we just finished the show and we're doing another one.
Yeah, February we can bring in some advocates to talk about advocates today.
Cool.
Be in full swing by then.
Yeah. It's only in Washington. Remember, we're all over the place. It's the 60-day session, so it'll go quick. It'll start next week, Monday, January 11th, and go through, February? February the 29th, I think. Don't quote me on that as gospel, but I think it's in that range. Because it's 60 days, exactly 60 days is just this session. So it's the short, considered the short session.
It's so weird that in 60 days we have to live here. Almost another year for something.
And Sean, one of these days I would love to get a legislator to talk about a bill that we like or don't like or whatever, to have a legislator come on if she'd like. Or if you would like that idea, we can work on that.
Yeah, we can work on that.
I was thinking of Emily Randall or somebody like that. Or I would kind of flip if the governor picked up the phone and said, hey, I like stuck for a while.
Well, maybe even have the leaders from the governor's office.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, we'll give her an open invitation.
Yeah, so that would be good. And then I've been here talking about New Year's plans. So one of the plans for this show would be to have a live stream, hopefully by the end of this year, and to do more on social media too, so make it bigger and make it well.
Wow, man, that's awesome. And you'll be here, so we could actually, we'll make a, I can even, we can work on a, you even get your little studio or something.
Oh, boy, well, I have an office set up pretty fast.
Well, do fine. You'll do fine. At the same time, you can have it at my house, too. Let's say you're always welcome here. And well, ladies and gentlemen, we got 9 minutes to go, but we thank you for watching tonight. And thank you for being here. Thanks to our guests one more time. And really, I hope one thing that I hope that happens on the radio show, that you're uplifted about what you're capable of doing. You're capable of doing so much more than people have told you you can do. And I'm grateful for the opportunity to be on every week with Sean, and or every month with Sean. Every week would be a little difficult, but I think you'd shoot me. But you know, the other thing about being in the same town together, we'll be able to maybe put some stuff together and show you some legislative stuff too. And I'm looking at Apple Broadcast maybe. We can tweak some of that and some of this on the show, and looking for other guests. So if you'd like to be a guest on our radio show, please drop us a line at No More BS at BrainInjury.network. Is that right?
Hold on 1 minute, I can find it.
Okay. I just want to make sure I'm not doing that wrong. Everybody, be good to yourself and go reach for the stars. You might not be able to reach the moon, but you can reach for some stars. Go for some dreams. God puts it this way: without dreams, my people perish.
Oh,
so, go for things that you want to do this year. Be good to yourself.
If you want to, you know, it's no more BS to @gmail.com.
Okay, cool. No more BS to more BS.
Yeah, no more BS, the number 2.
At email.com.
Email.
Actually, we should get some cards made so it's easy to remember.
Yeah.
I'll do that next time we get together. I'll take us to Kinko's and get a bunch.
You don't even have to do that anymore. You can order them online.
So, told you, you're a computer genius.
I will be honest with you. I order about 90% of my stuff online.
It doesn't matter how you learn it, buddy. I'm just grateful that you know and you're willing to share with people and with me. I mean, you're amazing. You're a gift. You're a gift, and the gift's even getting better. You're moving to my hometown. I promise you not to drive you nuts, but you definitely can't say you don't have a friend. You walk in the place, and you got a friend already.
Yeah.
And you can always call and say, hey, forget the call. Come on over. I'll come over. So, yeah. Whatever works.
Oh, I'm going to invite you. You don't worry about them.
I love you, buddy, and I'll see you next month on the radio show. And you have your computer next to you, what is the first Tuesday of the month next week or next month?
February 1st.
February 1st. Okay, so we'll be here from 7 to 9, February 1st, ladies and gentlemen. And we thank you for listening. This has been a Michael Rogers and Sean Nathan. And hopefully you enjoyed the show tonight. Please drop us a line and let us know. And we'll talk to you on the other side.
Oh, my God, we're up to the end of the day. It's all my time. Bye,
you, buddy.